Accession number 18359, Reel 1.
Gordon Hill, Reel 1, where were you born, please?
Sheffield.
Which year was this?
1931.
Did you grow up in Sheffield in the Second World War?
Yes, well, it was just outside Sheffield, a place called Wood House.
Were you a schoolboy during the Second World War?
I was, yeah. We actually didn't get a lot of schooling in. Our school was made into an hospital, and we went on to what they called home service, where we did half an hour a day in someone's front room.
Home service?
Home service, yeah. It was just someone that let the front room so that so many children could go in each day for half an hour and have a short lesson.
You only had school in for half an hour a day?
Yeah, for about 3 years, I think it was. We went back to school at the age of 11 to prepare us for the 11 plus.
You must have hardly got any school in.
We didn't get any at all, really. That's why my spelling's not very good, I think.
How old were you when you finished your education?
I was 14.
Did you experience any bombing in Sheffield in the Second World War?
Yes, it was. We had two lots. It just about ruined Sheffield. All of it up. It was all they were after the works, I think, steel works, which they did a lot of damage.
Can you describe what you saw with the bombing?
Well, at first, they wouldn't allow us down Sheffield, but my father was in the rescue, and my grandma lived in Sheffield, at a place called Ely, which suffered a lot of bombing, and my father gave us information on what had happened up there. It had blown a lot of houses, factories, nearly all Attercliff and Darnell were bombed. City centre, they did say that it was the flashes from the trams that run through the city centre that they located Sheffield through, because they came up the rather valley. And they saw this is what they say, whether it's true or not, I don't know. But the centre of Sheffield was really bombed. And a place called Marple's, which was a pub, a lot of people run for cover in the cellars there, and they never even found the bodies from that. There was Burton's shop and all places like that opposite. It was just all flat in that area.
Did any bombs fall in the Woodhouse area?
Landmines with a big railway junction that was bombed with landmines. You know, the type of thing that comes down with a parachute. It'd be about a mile and a half from where we lived. And we had they had some naval guns on the railway tracks, which they were firing, and like Bert, we collected bits of shrapnel and things like that for changing, you know, at school, swapping over. It was on all the streets and roads. They didn't actually bomb our village as such. There was a string of incendiary bombs went across it. One landed in school, burnt part at school, which by then was an hospital. And another one landed in a chemist shop. And the house where I live now, I found an incendiary bomb fin in attic on that, in there, you know, well, 20 years ago now. But we weren't living in it at the time.
What was your address in Woodhouse in the Second World War?
I was at Woodhouse Mill, actually. It was 7 Watch Street.
Were you frightened during the bombing?
No, really. My mother couldn't get me into shelter. I wouldn't go. I used to sit in chair, because when my father being at rescue, he was out. And my mother used to get me downstairs, and I used to sit in chair. I used to say, I'm not going in shelter. I did go in, but I think I was a bit of a pain. I wouldn't go.
Why did you refuse to go in the shelter?
I don't know. I'm just optioning it, I think. I don't think I really thought things were happening, what was happening, you know, not till we found out after what had happened. I think the second time they bombed Sheffield, I think I went in straight away then. They bombed it at Thursday and then Sunday after. But at that, I weren't very old when it all this happened, like, you know.
Did you ever come across anybody who was shattered by the bombing?
No, not really. My grandma was, there was, their houses were badly bombed. All the windows and doors and that was in. It shook her up, you know, she was really upset about it all. And my grandfather, he worked at a place called Tysocks in Sheffield, and I do believe there were two bombs landed in the water at side of their works, what they used for cooling plant, you know.
Did you suffer in any way, other way, apart from the bombing and the schooling during the Second World War?
No, I don't think so. Only rationing, of course. Everybody suffered from that. Well, I can remember these big queues. Some oranges came. We lived where the court was on the end of the road, the Cooperative Society. Any oranges or anything like that came, my mother used to send me to go and get in queue. The queues were, you know, ever so long, and we used to have to queue up. And then when we got near the front, my mother would come then and go and get two oranges or three oranges, whatever were allowed, you know. Everywhere you went, we're queuing for things.
Were there any celebrations in Sheffield at the war's end?
Yeah, every street had a party. You know, they put tables out and everybody helped best way they could with what stuff they could make, you know, from the rations and that. We had, you know, probably tea and buns and pop and buns, things like that.
Were there any foreign POWs in the area?
Yeah, we had Italians, this place called Treaton, and at Lodgemoor. I don't think there was any German prisoners. There was nearly, and they were free to walk about. You used to let them wander around, you know. Not into the villages, but around the camps where they was.
What was the attitude of local people towards the Italian POW?
I think it was pretty good. I don't think... I never heard anybody say anything about them, but there again, you know, we're children, they weren't much set to us. A lot of the local girls used to go with them, actually, you know, go into the wood where they were and that. The older girls, I don't mean, you know, school girls. But apart from that, I don't think, no, I never remember anything, you know, happening, because they sort of just let them mingle from the start. They were working on the fields and things like that, you know, they'd help with the farming. And I do remember them having, they had a British Army uniform, but it was dyed dark brown with a big yellow diamond on the back. I can remember that, you know. Much more than that, I can't remember.
How did you come to be in the Army yourself?
A national service.
Do you remember when you were called up?
Yeah, I went in the Army on the 4th of August, 1949.
How did you feel about that?
I wanted to go, actually. I wanted to join Navy when I was 16 and my father wouldn't let me. And it didn't bother me one bit. I think my parents were more bothered than I was.
Where did you have to go to start off with?
Borden, in Hampshire, where Bert was.
What happened to you then?
We did his national basic training there. I did 10 weeks there. And then I had 48 hours leave, and I was sent to a place called Malvern on a course. From there, I went back to Borden. I got 10 days leave and was sent straight abroad to Malaya.
What was the basic training like?
It was pretty strict. As long as you did what you're told, you got by. It was just one or two that, you know, thought they were better than the army and got punished for it.
Did that include you?
No, I was a good boy. It went best way.
Do you think that you were treated reasonably or not?
Yeah, I should say so. Yes, they were very strict, which they had to be, of course. And we just had one lad that was a bit of a rogue, and he'd still got 5 years to do it in the army when I came out through civilian punishment. Right? Pardon?
In what way was he a rogue?
Well, apparently he'd been called up and he deserted and gone into Merchant Navy. they caught him up when he was put into our intake, and he was always in trouble from day one, different things. He was then put on fatigue jankers, pulling rolling about on lawns and things like that for punishment. And then he had an incident in Malaya where he got 5 years for hitting somebody. And he was, as I say, he was still out there when I came home. He'd still got some time to do in civilian prison.
What did the rest of the men think to him?
Well, he didn't get on too good. When he was on company commander's orders for a punishment, for something he'd done, he borrowed one of my mate's uniforms to go on because he never bothered with his. He came off that. My mate was looking for his uniform, couldn't find it. He came off company commander's orders and he got it on. So he got some more punishment for that. There were sorts of things he used to do, you know. But he was always in trouble one way and another, you know. One thing or another, I don't know what sort of trouble. He always seemed to find something.
So he'd taken his comrade's uniform without permission?
Yeah. We was out on drill or something and he'd just put it on because it was smarter than his. And, well, he never bothered with his and went on company commanders in it.
Where was he from?
I couldn't say now. I can't remember. Nobody knew much of him, really. But, you know, he was always getting split up from. The only thing I can remember, they called him Clark. That was as much as I can remember of him.
How did you feel about going abroad?
All right. What happened was, when I done my basic training, I had to go on this course. All my mates, what I made, was all going to Malaya. They were going for Far East training. And I wanted to go back with them, you know, if I could get with them, which unfortunately I did.
How did you get out there?
Ship. We sailed 4 weeks.
In the same ship as Mr. Moss?
No, I went on Lancashire. SS Lancashire, I think it was.
What were conditions like aboard?
Apart from fatigues, we used to have to do fatigues. It was a bit rough going through the Bay of Biscay. I were on galley fatigues on that. And after that, I think all we did was guards, while we got out there. We docked at Singapore.
Were you already in the King's Own Yorkshire Light Infantry before you went out?
Yeah. It was my parent regiment in training. We trained the 6 regiments of light infantry, and the regiment that wanted you when you finished, you went to. But with me being a Yorkshire person, I was paid by the King's Own Yorkshire Light Infantry, even in training. So I naturally, you know, just continued straight into the KYLI.
So you went out as a reinforcement to the battalion?
Yeah.
And what happened to you once you got to Singapore?
We was armed and ammunition and put on the train to travel up to Penang. Well, we went to Butterworth, and then we was on a ferry, went across to thing. The train was ambushed on its way up, but there was nobody hurt. We didn't see much of the action because they had guards with machine guns on back and front of the train, and they fired back, and that was it. You know, it just petered out, and we set off again.
Did you feel nervous at all?
It was a bit scary, yeah. Well, it was a lot scary, actually.
When do you think this was, when you arrived in Malaya?
The time. It was around Christmas 49. Can't remember the exact date.
And once you got to Penang?
We was in Penang for a week, where we got equipped with... We'd already been issued with OG and everything in England, but we had to be equipped with the lightweight webbing equipment and things like that. We had a week there, like a basic training to get us used to the terrain, you know, the heat and everything. And from there, after a week, we went to a place called Crow, which was up near the Siamese border, where we did another week jungle training. And then was sent out to rifle companies.
What did the jungle training consist of?
Patrolling. How to build bivouacs or bashes to sleep in at night. River crossing.
Is it useful?
Yeah. Did you say, was it useful?
Yes.
Yeah, very useful, because we really did a short patrol of 2 days from one camp to another and stayed at the camp at night and then came back. But we used the tracks, what was already through the jungle. We didn't do no cutting or anything. It was just more or less to acclimatise you and, you know, just teach you basic things to look for and things like that.
What does OG mean?
Olive green.
What was it like in the Malayan jungle?
Well, it wasn't very pleasant. I was a scout myself, and that my job, and a friend of mine, which we're still friends now actually, our job was to cut our way through the jungle. The number one scout cut the way through, and the second one widened it up so they could get through, you know, with Bren guns, and signaller could get through with his set and things like that. Really all arm work.
Did you ask to be a scout, or were you told?
No, just selected.
What implement did you use to cut?
Well, we used to call them matchets, but they call them cookeries now. It was a long knife, long steel blade with just an handle on it, and heavy at the front end for weight. You know.
What were the main problems in doing that job?
Well, you used to get cut a lot, you know, from like bramble type things. And, it were virgin jungle, so you know you sort of went from perhaps boggy leaves to sludge or whatever, and then you get probably a bit of hard ground, and it was just one of them jobs that had to be done. Somebody had to do it, so I got picked for it. Like, we used to be about roughly 30 yards in front of the first man in the patrol, so us two was on his own, clearing the way. So that, you know, if the communists saw you coming, sort of thing, they'd only see two of you. They'd know there was the rest of the patrol behind you, but not exactly where or, you know, what they were doing.
How did you feel about doing this job?
I got used to it, really. We had a good mate. We took it in turns. And, you know, it were all right, really. I don't think I'd have wanted to just patrol. I think it were much better than just being in the patrol, you know. It sort of took your mind off things, because you got to, you know, clear the way and sort of pick the easiest way you could through for the others to come through it.
So you didn't have a weapon?
Yes. Yeah, I had an Australian Owen gun. It was an improvement on a Sten gun. And my matey had a silent Sten gun.
So where did you carry the weapon?
You used to have to have it on you used to fix on your shoulder, just on a strap. You used to hold that with one hand and cut with the other. It wasn't right heavy. They were light weapons. We used to carry 6 magazines strapped to his leg in a pouch.
And what about the creatures that you encountered when you were chopping through the jungle?
Well, most of them would retreat. They were just the occasional snake you saw, probably hung out of a tree or something. But the worst things were what they call the bootlace snake. It was a very thin, about a foot, 18 inches long, which used to strike at your feet. But we wore jungle boots. I'm not ever saying that I was ever struck with one, but we wore jungle boots, which came 3/4 part up your lower part of your leg and they got rubber reinforcements on for this sort of thing, you know.
Did you have any encounters with the enemy?
Yeah, once or twice.
Can you describe each one, please?
Yeah, I was stationed at Cleaning Tan, which was on the Siamese border, and the job was, it was a three-vehicle road, and we had to escort an ambulance from Cleaning Tan down to a place called Baling. And on the way down, there'd only one scout car available, so I was picked for to go on the escort with the scout car. Funnily enough, the chap that drove the scout car had got the same name as I had, Gordon Hill. They called us both Gordon Hill. And the ambulance got fired upon going down there. I returned the fire, but it was guesswork, so I don't know if I hit anything or not. And after that, we was on a big patrol. All the battalion was on what they called the Lengong. We used to call it Lengong Duffy. It was in the Lengong area, and all the battalion went out for just over 3 weeks. And one morning we'd went out from base camp, and we found quite a large communist camp where they'd must have heard us coming, and they went, and they'd left all the breakfast and everything. The rice was cooking and coffee boiling, and then after that, it was in January or February 51, we were ambushed. We'd just come out at Jundle into a rubber, and we were ambushed, and one of my mates got killed there.
Can you describe what happened?
Yeah, we came up out of the jungle, and as we were coming out of the jungle, there was an area being cleared by Chinese. When they saw us coming, they all went and left the saws and axes and whatever they had for cutting it down. We thought there was something, but we didn't know exactly what. And being a scout, I'd gone up onto the top of the hill, and I found a track which didn't lead anywhere, which was usually a sign that they were communists, because what they used to do, they'd make a track, and when it was near the camp, they'd split off so they didn't have a definite track into the camp. And I found a pen on the floor. I sent for the officer, and he came up, and he looked at it, and he says, well, go out to Jundle, and go down the side of the Jundle and across the bottom of the rubber. We set off down, got across the bottom, and the communists were on top of the hill, in the rubber, and it was terraced. And it was red ash. A captain that was in Force 136 during war was the officer of the 2nd Platoon, not the one I had sent for. And he knew quite a lot about what they did and that, and he saw one of the communists on top of the hill. He shouted, there's a camp at top of the hill. As soon as he shouted, they opened fire on us. We went the best way we could up this hill, because it was all like crumbling from under his feet with it being this red ash. One of the lads got killed, like called Jimmy Whitehead. And the EY rifleman, he fired his EY rifle, and the grenade exploded above us and slightly wounded a few. Not seriously, you know, just more or less hot shrapnel landed on. And they left a rear guard to hold us up. A lad called Roberts shot him, and a Sergeant D finished him. Roberts fell, and Sergeant D finished him. We then cut round the hill to cut him off, but they'd vanished into the jungle. It were a camp of about 25 to 30. And then we sort of... the wounded, and half of the sort of the wounded and another half went round and tried to follow, cut them off, but we couldn't find nothing of them. I think after that,
what did you see of the enemy who was killed then?
There was just the one we found. There was still left in a camp. Apparently, he was an officer, we got some documents off him from where there was other camps, which had to, we had to send for the police if there'd been anything like this, the Lotal, which they took. But after the event, about fortnight, 3 week after, in the same area we were still patrolling, and we found four bodies in a swamp, communist bodies in a swamp. So we gathered what had happened. These had been it as well, because there'd been no more attacks in this area in this period of time. And we gathered they, you know, they were the what had been killed. They took them away, all wounded. They died, and they'd thrown them in this swamp. That was just after that occasion.
Did you see any of the enemy in that incident?
On when we was ambushed, yeah. Well, you just saw more or less. What you got was the blowing of the grass. You know, when they fired, you didn't actually see the person. You just saw the corky and, you know, the KD, and you could see the blast from the rifle. You couldn't exactly pick out who was who. You know, it was just something to fire at. You just fired it where you thought there was, because you couldn't, you know, couldn't see anything really.
Which month was this in?
I think it was either January or February 51. I can't remember exactly.
And whereabouts was it?
This was in the Kedder area. We was at a station, a base camp was at a place called Lubok Saginta.
How did your comrade get killed in that incident?
Well, he was all going charging up this hill. Well, getting up best way we could, and a bullet went straight through his mouth and took the back of his head out.
What's an EY rifle?
It fires grenades.
What does EY stand for?
I don't know, to be honest. We always call it an EY rifle.
And which company and platoon were you in then?
At that incident, I was in 6th Platoon B Company. But I was in B Company all the time I was out there.
But you were swapped from one platoon to another?
Yeah. They built the battalion up. I was in 4th Platoon, and they built the battalion up, and they took so many senior soldiers from 4th Platoon into 6th Platoon. So that the new lot that came out, half went to 4th Platoon and half went to 6th Platoon.
And going back to what you said before about the discovery of that enemy camp, you said it was near Lentong?
No, it was near Lubok Saginta, in the Lubok Saginta area. It was all in Kedah.
But before you were talking about Lentong Duffy?
Lengong.
Lengong.
Gong, yeah.
Lengong.
Yeah, that was in August 50, that.
What does Duffy mean?
Well, it was a patrol. We used to go out for so many days. And they used to say, you're going on a 5-day Duffy or a 6-day Duffy or a 2-day Duffy. It was just soldier slang, really.
So Duffy means a patrol?
Yeah.
Did you have any special name for the jungle?
Yeah, we did. Ulu.
Any other slang names you had?
Probably I can't just think of any at the minute.